opportunity for us.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is February 5th, and I would like to open an organizational meeting for the adoption of committee rules. Cassie, do you want to tell us if there are any changes?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are no substantive changes to the committee rules. The only thing to note is that there are shorter deadlines for minority reports. I'm happy to explain the specifics if you'd like.
Same old rules.
Yeah. So, Chair Monis Anderson, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 5, 2018.
Senator DeBoer moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 5th, 2018. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, or is there any opposition? Seeing none, then the committee rules are adopted. I would like to welcome everyone, and if each person could just introduce themselves, starting with Senator Beyer.
We just did that.
Deja vu all over again.
I'm Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 6, which is the Central Lane County, Linn County area.
And I'm Alan DeBoer, Senator from District 3, which is Ashland, part of Medford, most of Medford, Jacksonville, Talent, Phoenix area.
Senator Knope?
Yes, I'm Senator Knope. Welcome, Senator DeBoer. I am from Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River.
Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, Northwest Portland, unincorporated Washington County, and part of Beaverton.
And then Cassie, and if you could introduce our Danielle.
Hi, everyone. My name is Cassie Soucy. I'm the LPRO analyst for this committee, and we have Danielle Ross, who will be our committee assistant.
And I'm Lori Monis Anderson from the Gresham area, Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. We have an informational hearing. I'm treating it like a public hearing only because of the rules that the Senate has that I could not make this a public hearing. So I see Senator Volquist here, so I would like to open a informational hearing on Senate Bill 1548. And Cassie, if you go over the
Yep. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1548 establishes June as Oregon's Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Month and establishes June 27th as Oregon Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We do have a -1 amendment, and the -1 amendment removes injury from the measure.
And do we have someone on the phone that's going to be?
I can call him at any point.
Let's call. If you could call him right now, yeah. And then we'll have Senator Volquist start us off.
All kinds of time, ma'am. It's his committee that's getting screwed up because I'm supposed to be transcribing his stuff right now, but I'm not. I'm only a day late, Lee. What can you say?
Hi, is this Thomas Mahaney?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Thomas. This is Cassie from the Senate Healthcare Committee in Oregon. We have you on speakerphone. We're going to have one of our senators testify, and then we will get to your testimony.
Okay. Welcome, Tom. This is Senator Lori Monis Anderson, and I would like to have Senator Volquist start us out on the importance of post-traumatic stress.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair Monis Anderson and Vice Chair Senator DeBoer. I want to first introduce myself as the Chairman of the Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee, and I want to thank all of you for taking time to look at this bill, and the reason being is we tried this in my committee. And in fact, we did several things along this line and managed to get out of our chamber to the other chamber, and it didn't get any traction. Since that time, the only thing that's really changed is every day that has gone by, 22 veterans have committed suicide. 22 every day. we have to turn around and look at ourselves and say, when most of the statistics show that almost half the population has mental health care issues, the question is why veterans and why so many? I think the first issue that jumps out is that veterans of the Vietnam era served about one tour, and they served that anywhere from 3 to 4 decades ago, and it's now coming back to haunt them. Unfortunately, in the Afghanistan and Iraq situation, we've now been at war for 17 years, and the average tour in an individual experience over there is from 3 to 8 times. Not one tour in Vietnam like some individuals in this room have done, but 3 to 8 tours. And in a situation mostly in an urban environment, in a very confusing situation. You would think we would learn something for 4 decades. When we started doing veterans issues in this building in 2005, we had to build a foundation. I previously thought that in the area of post-traumatic stress injury or disease or whatever term you want to utilize, that it would kind of be a no-brainer. But we're now going back to square one and trying to build that public support out there, and that's what we're attempting to do, in my mind, in the bill that we have before us. If you're a veteran today and you're like Command Sergeant Major Manning or myself, who is a colonel in service, and you go to the Federal Veterans Administration, frankly, you get pretty doggone good service because you were a senior non-commissioned officer or you were a senior officer. Unfortunately, if you're a private, a specialist, or a sergeant, or a tech sergeant, or a civilian that was involved in one of the overseas wars, what transpires when you get there is what is sitting to my right, your left. Here's a bottle of opiates. Go buy a bottle of Jack Daniels, and that's what we're going to do to help you. Now, I have actually heard that from very, very senior ranking members of the Federal Veterans Administration. Many of them who have, of course, tried to change that mentality out there, and many of them who have lost their jobs over doing that because it's not economical. It's cheaper to go buy a fifth of booze and give them a bottle of opiates. So what we are back here in the legislature is trying to build a basis through recognition, through the public, and in Oregon. And for anyone who thinks this is a federal issue, just go to your local law enforcement agency, go to your local emergency room, or listen to the anonymous calls you get. We get dozens of calls in my office about this issue. And the individual veterans that call and the law enforcement officers that have been affected by this who call want to be anonymous because retribution's alive and well, especially in the military, especially in the Veterans Administration. And so they don't want their name put out there, but they want the state to do something. And if that means we have to go back to square one and we have to make a recognition day and we have to make a recognition month and we have to go back and build the support again, then colleagues, that's what we need to do. Because this issue is not going away. If I just go back to what I opened with, those Vietnam veterans right now, which are the largest body of veterans we have out there, those veterans are now coming to a fruition in which PTSD, PTSI is a major issue 4 decades ago after one tour in a combat zone in a very crappy place. Now, turn around and look at the veterans today who did 8 tours. We have people in the National Guard in Oregon, 8 tours. And now what do you think is going to happen? It's going to come quicker. It's going to come faster. And if we don't get ahead of this, it is going to be a catastrophe in our local communities. That's who will swamp the emergency rooms. That will swamp the mental health care system. And so I'm sure you're going to hear with much more people who are better knowledgeable in the mental health care aspects of this. But at us layman levels, we need to do something. And right now, let's go back to the beginning and say, we have a problem. Let's identify it. That, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to listen to your other testimony or take questions.
Okay. Do you have questions for Senator Boqvist at this point in time? All right. We have a veteran on the phone, Thomas Mahaney, I believe, and he brought this bill forward because he actually wants to change post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, to PTSI. That's an issue, and I think from his testimony, he wants to put forward why he wants to change it to injury at this point. So, Tom, would you go ahead and introduce yourself, and please give your testimony.
Yes, my name is Thomas Mahaney, and I am actually a resident of
Michigan, and we've been working on this campaign to, what we really want to do is we want to get rid of the word disorder, because the word disorder, it interferes with people seeking help, I also want to say that we don't necessarily oppose the use of just plain post-traumatic stress, but at the same time, we don't support it, because there is a distinction, a very clear distinction between common post-traumatic stress, which is a very normal reaction to any traumatic event that you may witness or go through. And there's if you are affected by that traumatic event and your symptoms don't go away within a month, then your brain has been altered. It has been injured. All right. So what I ask you is to please consider that we don't want to blur the line between a common reaction to a very unpleasant situation and a serious injury that needs to be treated. And the American Psychiatric Association is a very adamant about keeping that distinction. And they're also very adamant at this point about keeping the word disorder, but I think time will prove that more enlightened minds will prevail, and we will get rid of the word disorder, because it may be good for the clinician, but it's not good for the patient. So I'm not sure what else I can say at this point. I know that, you know, Oregon is a sovereign state, and you all, I think you understand, at least I know that you understand that the word disorder does nobody any good, okay? So, to get away from the D is a good thing, but to get away from the D and to make the injury honorable, that's a better thing. And injury is a much more honorable term. And I ask you to consider that.
Thank you.
I'd like to say this one last thing. Last year we had 34 states that participated in making June 27th of 2017 Post Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day. And we're gathering, and that's what we're hoping to get from Oregon too. And we did get proclamations from Governor Brown the last 2 years, but a proclamation is not the same as a resolution by the assembly, and in this case, an actual bill, which calls for perpetuity.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for bringing this forward. This has been an issue that Senator Boquist and I have dealt with in the Veterans Committee, and I think we've dealt with it also in the Healthcare Committee. We do want the bill to pass, so that's why I can't guarantee anything, but I do want to thank you. If you want to stay on the line, you can listen to the rest of the testimony.
All right, thank you.
Senator Steiner Hayward, and I'd like to bring forward Cameron Smith too.
Do we have other people who want? I'm happy to wait for my comments.
Cameron
after
is
Mr.
the only
Smith.
One. Is there anyone else that wants to testify? Okay, no, and then after.
Yeah, after Mr. Smith talks. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the Acting Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and want to thank Senator Boquist and Senator Monis Anderson for their leadership on this issue. What I have come to appreciate is the symbolic nature of our proclamations and our honoring of specific days is much more impactful than we actually realize, and want to lend my support for this bill moving forward, and I think there is broad consensus that dropping the D from a symbolic nature of that outreach and making sure that we are connecting individuals to treatment, whether they are veterans, whether victims of natural disasters or sexual assault, post-traumatic stress is a natural response to traumatic events, and to make sure that we are increasing that outreach and treatment available going forward is a significant effort. And for our veterans, I don't think we do not raise our hand for a sprained ankle, much less a mental health challenge. So anything we can do to increase that availability of treatment is significant. I would just note that post-traumatic stress disorder entered the diagnostic manuals in the third edition in 1980, often out of that experience of our Vietnam veterans not being welcomed home in their own time. But whether we call it shell shock, battle fatigue, soldier's heart, or post-traumatic stress, we need to take the symbolic efforts to recognize and highlight that, and then work equally hard, whether it's on the opioid addiction treatment, the larger treatment issues, both for drugs and alcohol, and how, in my new role with DCBS, how we can continue to bring that to bear through the Division of Financial Regulation and the Insurance Division. And I would just note June 27th has been the National Day of Recognition for Post-Traumatic Stress, as well as now, I believe that was in 2010 by the U.S., by Congress, and then in 2014 making the entire month. And a lot of outreach events that happen specifically to our military and veterans with the anniversary of D-Day, with Flag Day, the commemorative start of the Korean War on June 25th. A lot of good opportunity, even the Army's birthday. I was reluctant to admit that as well, as a proud Marine, but even the Army's birthday in June. But we laugh, but that outreach throughout that month is significant, and to raise that attention. So I would lend my support also to the Dash 1 amendments that would less make a statement on injury or disorder, and simply let's recognize post-traumatic stress and get this done.
Thank you. And just for those of you, we do have a Dash 1 amendment that takes the I out, doesn't use the D, but it's post-traumatic stress. So, Senator Steiner, any questions for Mr. Smith? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mahaney, this is a Senator Steiner Hayward, and I completely agree with everything you said, sir, and I'm very grateful for your work on this. I also agree with what Mr. Smith said about the importance of recognizing this and bringing public awareness. One of my questions for you, Mr. Mahaney, is what have you done in other states to educate people about this change in terminology, and how has that increased people accessing treatment? Have you noticed an uptick in people seeking care for this injury after implementing this change?
Well, I don't have any metrics on that, all right? All I know is that as we go down this path towards eliminating the word disorder and keeping the distinction between the normal reaction and the wound, the invisible wound, that the states are starting to learn about each other's work. And again, what we're really looking at here is we're compiling evidence to take to the next DSM meeting to get the APA to change the name in the DSM, and once that happens, then you will see that the press and the powers to be, so to speak, will catch on, and that, then we'd be really making progress at that point. But at this point, without the APA signing off on it, and they have discussed it. They discussed it in 2012 in great detail, but we're still looking at some of the members that created the term. They're still part of the administration, and they're not quite ready to give up their leadership position. And it's unfortunate because it's not about the clinician, it's about the patient.
Your points are well taken. Thank you, Mr. Mahaney. I guess my only concern is how do we talk to people about the fact that if they seek treatment for what we're describing here as an injury, and then on their charts or on their bills they see disorder, how do we have that conversation in a constructive way with people so they don't feel as if we're misleading them? I don't disagree with you about the brain changes.
Well, this is where we begin. Yeah. This is how we do it, and I've been working on this for 7 years now, and it's a big rock we're pushing, but if we keep pushing, we'll move it.
Thank you for your dedication, Mr. Mahaney. I know it's making a difference to a lot of people.
Madam Chair, let me comment briefly and go actually one step before my good colleague, the doctor, Senator Steiner-Hayward, mentioned it, and that is human nature drives most everything in the world. So if, as example, I were to tell Senator DeBoer, the Honorable Vice Chair, you have an injury, he would go seek help. I'm a cut, you know, where's it at? You know, where's the medic? Where's something like that? If you tell someone they have a disorder, they stop and pause. I would much rather be in the position of trying to explain the billing cycle or to those people after we got them in and got treatment, because the problem we face, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a combat veteran or whatever it is out there, if you label something as a disorder, they are less likely by human nature to seek the assistance that they need, even if we had a perfect world. Whereas if you tell someone you're injured, the first thing I think, I'm bleeding, what's going on? There's something here. And that is where we got to get across the threshold. I mean, it's the unfortunate thing. It's like the opiate situation, colleagues here, is the opiate situation reached crisis level. Probably had we not treated the overdose of opiates, it would have reached crisis level beforehand, but at least we saved lives doing that. And the point we're trying to do here is to get it recognized and let people understand it faster and let people seek assistance and not have human nature in their brain say, I got a disorder, I'm not going to do anything. And I'll tell you, veterans, you tell a veteran he's got a disorder, he's not going to the clinic. That's the problem we face today. Instead, the clinic is local law enforcement.
Thank you. Is there any other comments from the diet? So what we have, we're in it only an informational, and we will be scheduling this for a week from today. And it would be nice to have the Psychiatric Association weigh in on this. I'm not quite sure who the contact is.
Katie
is. And so if you could bring testimony to Cassie, if you have it beforehand, unless you want to come up now.
No,
okay. and so just to see, get input from them. And we do have the amendment, because I think it's extremely important for us to designate a day and a month for post-traumatic stress, whether we call it injury. I agree about not using the word disorder, because I agree very much with the testimony that we have just had. So with that, if there's no further comments, thank you very much. And the next thing for this bill, it has a wonderful relating to clause. We're not discussing, though. No. Okay. So I'm going to close the informational on Senate Bill 1548. Thank you very much, Mr. Mahoney.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Should have told him he introduced that as evidence.
Yeah. And I'd like to open an informational on Senate Bill 1549. Cassie?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1549 prohibits the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority from terminating Medicaid coverage through the Oregon Health Plan for individuals admitted to a state hospital until the person's recertification date or 12 months after the person is admitted, whichever is earlier. The measure declares an emergency effective on passage. We do have a dash one amendment that creates new provisions that are not related to what I just described. The new provisions allow Department of Consumer and Business Services to approve a filing for a health benefit plan that qualifies for a health savings account distribution and is subject to prohibition of applying a deductible under specified conditions. This applies to health benefit plans issued or renewed on or after January 1st, 2019.
So we're going to just talk about the base bill right now, and I would like to have Mr. Swanson, the interim superintendent for the Oregon State Hospital, and Eric Price, who is the business operations director, to proceed.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Mona Sanderson and committee members. Again, my name is John Swanson. I'm the interim superintendent. Eric Price is actually my interim CFO at the time, and I'm going to defer to Eric. He's been kind of the architect of this this bill to walk through some of the information on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Price, and the genesis of this bill is to remove statutory language that exists in Oregon Revised Statute 411.439, which requires the suspension of Medicaid benefits for those individuals aged 22 to 65. We are proposing this as a technical adjustment to allow the agency an opportunity to begin exploring options to continue Medicaid benefits and CCO coverage while a client is admitted to the state hospital. This change will allow the agency to provide a better continuum of care and to help with discharge planning through case management actions and the lack of need to reinstate a member to Medicaid upon discharge. I would believe this provides greater permeability into and out of the hospital and resolve some of the mental health parity issues that exist with this current statute.
I just visited Telecare, which is a behavioral health organization. They have many throughout the state, and they have one in Gresham. I was telling them about this bill, and they said that would be so nice because they get referrals from the state hospital. They told me that the average stay of a person in the state hospital is like 6 to 9 months or something like that, less than a year. And it takes so long for them to then get back into their Medicaid, get their Medicaid insurance, and it can even delay them getting into an organization for immediate follow-up care. Can you comment on that?
Yes, I will. So for the record, the last data we have for calendar year fiscal 17, of the 625 discharges for aid and assist, the median length of stay was 72 days. The 307 discharges for civil population, the median length of stay is 133. And for the GEI population, we had 26 discharges with a median length of stay of 679 days. We believe that a lot of the structure and a lot of the belief around the state hospital revolves around these lengths of stay that are over a year or more, when the reality is less than 3% of the discharges are more than 133 days. We do believe that there is a correlation with this bill that if passed, we would remove some of those administrative burdens that are requiring longer lengths of stay due to the difficulties and challenges of finding placements in the community as patients may not have benefits in place. In many ways, it's a supply and demand issue where the demand for beds is greater than supply, and if it comes down to a patient with benefits or without, the patient with benefits is more likely to get a placement, whereas patients in our facility face that additional burden and challenge to get placed due to lack of benefits that are currently being suspended due to this bill or this statute's in place.
So when they're in the state hospital, they can't get, you can't get Medicaid funding, correct? They can, though, have that insurance still in place when they're not in the system. Am I interpreting that correct?
Yes, the intent is to maintain eligibility, but the federal fund participation for the age ineligible would not change. Patients would maintain eligible on the rolls for Medicaid, and through claim submission, we can create a scenario where we're not getting paid for those services, and the patient would be, there'd be visibility from admission through discharge, whether it be traditional Medicaid or CCO enrollment. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Chairman? It does.
Yeah, and it's an element called the Institution for Mental Disease Exclusion that prevents us from being able to actually pay for benefits while we're in the hospital.
Okay. Questions? Senator Steiner?
No, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How's this affect people that are on private insurance? And I hear something about juvenile detention, too, that insurance ceases in a lot of policies, which makes no sense to me at all. Is something you could address?
Senator DeBoer, on the juvenile detention, I don't know. I don't have information on that, but I can talk about our patient population that's under age 18 to 22. The interaction with the private insurers is that if Medicaid is secondary, we are having a challenge when a patient's primary insurance goes through, whether it be commercial plan or Medicare, and it does go to Medicaid. Currently, Senate Bill 233 in 2015 addressed the 22 and under, and policies have been put in place through the OERs to allow those patients to maintain their Medicaid benefit, but it's hit and miss. There's some challenges with maintaining those patients on the Medicaid rolls because of how it's been implemented at the agency through our policies. I guess the answer I'm trying to get to is if we could keep all of our patients on Medicaid and not have that administrative front-end burden of disenrolling, re-enrolling, we'd have better outcomes for all of the Medicaid, commercial, third party, and Medicare. Did that answer your question, Senator?
Yes, thank you.
And just to be clear, now I lost my train of thought. I just wanted to make sure that if they are discharged and if they're ready to be discharged and they don't have Medicaid, are you keeping them longer in the hospital until they can get back on? Because that would save a horrendous amount of money for the state hospital.
Yes, Madam Chair, the answer to that question is that due to the administrative burden and the challenge of getting patients discharged, we are incurring administrative costs when the patient is medically ready to place. And that's one of the fixes we're hoping this bill will allow the agency to explore is reduction in time to get Medicaid benefits turned back on, and therefore reduction in time to place the patient once they're ready to transition.
Good. And there's no one else signed up to testify. There is no opposition to this. So it looks good for you guys.
Thank you very much.
Now I want to talk about the amendment, which has nothing to do with the base bill. And who signed up to testify? Oh, yes, Elizabeth Remley. And does DCBS want to be at the table or not? Yes. Thanks, Rick.
Chair Monis-Anderson, Vice Chair DeBoer, members of the committee, I'm Elizabeth Remley here on behalf of Cambia Health Solutions. Cambia is the parent company for Regence Blue Cross Blue Shield, one of the commercial insurers in the state of Oregon. As we were getting ready to file our 2019 plans, those filings are due this spring, so we file about 9 months in advance. We realized that we needed a technical fix to align state law with federal law when it comes to health savings accounts. We think that there are about 50,000 to 100,000 plans in the state that are health savings account related. People who use health savings accounts put money into their account pre-tax from their payroll, and then they use that money to pay for their health care needs. The IRS requires that those health savings accounts meet certain requirements. If we don't align state law with federal law, then the IRS could ding everyone who's using a health savings account for the taxes that they didn't pay on the money that they took from their payroll and put into their health savings account. Therefore, we just need this little technical amendment. We worked with DCBS and the other insurers to make sure that it was written well. And we think that this will take care of the problem. Thanks very much.
So just to make sure, so those that have a health savings account, they put, say, $5,000 for a year, if we don't do this technical fix, the IRS could ding them for tax purposes.
Chair Monis-Anderson, that's correct.
Thank you.
That's what we believe.
Chair Monis-Anderson and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rick Blackwell, policy manager with the Division of Financial Regulation. We don't take a position on the bill, obviously, but I've seen the amendment, straightforward fix. It does essentially what Elizabeth Remley has described. And I guess with that, I'd answer any questions.
Questions?
A comment. This is the first of an infinite number of questions we're going to have to deal with in terms of maintaining coupling or decoupling from federal tax code. Because of the changes that were incurred with the huge big tax bill the feds passed at the end of the year. This is a really, really important one, and it is not complicated and is not controversial, so thank you for bringing it forward.
So there's no one else to testify. So out there, I assume there is no opposition to the bill, that's or the amendment, so that's why I wanted to couple it with the original bill. And there should be. Is that correct? No opposition from anyone?
Chair Monis-Anderson, we have not heard about any opposition. We've worked with all the stakeholders we could identify. If anyone has questions, of course, they're welcome to reach out to me or to Rick to try to figure out how to answer those questions.
So right now, we're not taxing HSAs here in the state of Oregon, correct?
No.
So it's not going to affect our revenue at all.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. I will be quizzing the committee here on what you think of. I would like to know. I'll close the informational hearing on Senate Bill 1549. And what I want to know, I'd like to reschedule this for Monday, both of these, but I need to hear from you where you stand on the PTSI versus PTSD. And also the amendment to the Medicaid change. So I see thumbs up, but I'll still ask you individually. All right, any other comments? With that, we're adjourned.